You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ Bucky back together again. Buck, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm good, DJ. I am good. Hopefully you had a good little vacation. We had some interesting conversations while you were away. LZ came and filled in for a little bit. I did some stuff with Rhett. Had a great conversation with Bruce Bellman on everything that's going on with college. But now we get to reunite and get back and do what we love talking about, which is team building, which is evaluating all the fun stuff, whether it's football or other sports, like just how to evaluate and put together a championship squad.
Oh, it's great to see you, man. And thanks for holding down the fort and putting together some awesome episodes with our buddies. I do want to find out some things for you on the personal front before we get into the episode today. I need to know how the Spartans are doing in baseball. Your son Trey's up there at San Jose State. What kind of year did we have here?
Okay, so the Spartans had their first winning season since 2011.
Wow.
That put them in a situation where they now are eligible to go to the Mountain West Conference Tournament, which is in your hometown, which is in San Diego.
Nice.
And then if maybe they put together a run, because you see how crazy baseball is. They have to win. My son said they have to win 3 games. I looked at the bracket. I think you got to win 4 games. They win 4 games. They get a chance to go maybe to the NCAA tournament. So if they do that, that'd be a great little situation. And then, you know, meanwhile, he's also prepping to play in the summer. So it's crazy. It's all baseball.
I love
all the time,
man.
Over here.
I mean, you know, we've been doing this show a long time because I remember seeing, you know, you bringing Trey into the studio, bringing little Trey in. Now he's a Division I college athlete, man. I love it.
I've been playing like super close attention. You know, I don't start paying attention to baseball until this month, June. How are your Padres doing? I see them on TV every now and then. I watched them the other night versus the Giants. How are your Padres doing?
Now, Buck, I appreciate you asking about my Padres. Yeah, we are playing without the best player in Major League Baseball, and we're only 14 games over 500. You know, that's it. So we're a half game out from the Dodgers. I think maybe the second best record in the National League. I don't know. You know, it's okay. We're just going to add the best player in baseball here in a couple weeks. You know, we'll see how that goes. I think we're going to be okay. I'm actually going down there. I'm taking Siciliano down there to watch the Brewers tonight.
Okay, so you didn't notice you were away on vacation, but I'm a little jealous, right? Because I kind of feel like you're like pseudo assistant general manager for the Padres, because I see all your pictures there. You're kind of there, you're kind of involved, you're kind of around the team. I saw your name in lights on the scoreboard, and I feel like just from a competitive standpoint, then I need to do a better job of affiliating myself with the baseball team. So the Dodgers are my squad, but I feel like I need someone to welcome me in, so I also can just kind of have like behind the scenes insight and intel. And when I show up at the game, like everyone, it's a big deal and all that. So from a competitive standpoint, I feel like I'm a couple steps behind. So I gotta work on that. So our baseball people that are listening, I just kind of need like that open invite so I can adopt a major league team. So I, like DJ, can kind of be like a pseudo assistant general manager.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I am. That's exactly what I am. Exactly what my role is there. You nailed it. That's hilarious. Speaking of other sports, I want to start off here talking some basketball. Before we get into, on the episode today, we're going to talk about the fifth-year options that were declined and what lessons we can learn. I think that's a good team-building discussion and study to go in there and look and see if we can learn any lessons from that of why it might not have worked out with some of these guys. But I want to start out with heat culture, something I've heard you talk about a lot, and I just dove into it over the last week or so. I took my son out to Miami. He actually loves the Celtics, so we went out there and watched Game 2 where the Celtics beat the brakes off the Heat. And that series has been weird. It's been one blowout after another. But because we went out there to watch that game, I wanted to kind of read up on heat culture and see what I could learn. So I did some homework on it, read everything I could get my hands on, and some of the takeaways that I had, and I want to get your thoughts on it because you know this better than I do, having studied this team. But looking and reading this, this is one of the phrases that they use a lot in their organization, which is "we have enough," which I absolutely love, because you're sitting there saying, no matter who's hurt, no matter who leaves in free agency, the message within the walls of that building is always, we have enough. We have enough here to get it done. And I've talked to some GMs and coaches about this in the NFL and kind of exchanged this information. And that was, and we'll go through the rest of it here, but that was the thing that struck a chord with most of them, because how many times you in the building and be like, oh, we can't line up and play tomorrow if we don't get our fourth pass rusher. You know, if we don't have our, you know, our fifth corner, you know, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. And it's like, no. You preach that message inside the building, the players are going to believe it. You have to exude the confidence that, like, hey, shut the door. This is enough. We have enough in here to go win the whole thing.
Yeah, no, it's funny. You know, when you text me from the game, you call me from the game, you're down there in Miami. And I love it because since coaching, particularly taking over as a head coach, like, you always are looking for teams and organizations that you admire, whether it's businesses or teams in other sports, to just have what the buzzword is culture. And so the Miami Heat has always struck a chord with me because this is an organization that has always been consistently in the running, like good, bad, indifferent, whether they have stars or not, they're just kind of always around. And so you kind of admire those teams that have a level of consistency and stability to it. And so digging in, it's funny that you talk about we have enough. And so when you go back and you think about the Miami Heat, you think about Pat Riley and how Pat Riley set the standard. And, you know, the funny thing is when you go and you dig, like, the one thing they have is like this motto, right? And so he always talks about, we're the hardest working, best conditioned, most professional, unselfish, toughest, nastiest, most disliked team in the NBA. Like, that is their mission
statement. That's a t-shirt. That is
a t-shirt. And so when you think about that, like, it kind of embodies a lot of the stuff that we talk about in team building, right? So hardest working, you want guys that are going to come to work every day. They're going to work hard. They're going to do it. Best condition. You know, one of the things that we talk about, the superpowers of the great teams, they're in phenomenal shape. Yes. If you dig deep into the New England Patriots and how the Patriots have always gotten down, people talk about the hill sprints, them running throughout the year, conditioning, old school approach to being able to get it done. most professional. DJ, we always talk about, like, when we're talking to guys and we're doing the character assessment of prospects, I think the one thing that we always look at, is this guy a pro? Meaning, is he punctual? Is he prepared? Does he perform? All of those things. And it's really, really simple. They'll tell you when you go to a heat practice, the number one thing they do, first thing they do is all shirt tails are tucked in. Yep. And it may seem like something trivial, but DJ, like, you know, when you walk into a practice and you're looking, if all the shirt tails in, everyone has on the same stuff, you don't have like this individualism. To me, it strikes a chord about the team being there. And then in terms of unselfish, toughness, to me, and it was telling, like, so you went to game two where they got obliterated. Game three, they somehow win. They somehow win or whatever. And so everyone is like, well, how are they able to adjust? So their counter, DJ, whenever it gets rough, more effort, more physicality.
Yep.
It's not, oh, we need X's. No, oh, no, no. We got to play harder. We got to make it more of a street fight. So to me, it resonates like, well, if I'm a football team, like, hey, our answer, our calling card, we're going to make people play our style. And we'll ratchet it up until they eventually break. And so then the final part of it is nastiest, most disliked. I think you have to be in this business where when you're building your team, you want a team that is viewed as the evil empire. I'll talk about the Patriots a lot because over the last 20 years, they've been the most successful team. People hate the evil empire, but within that hate is an admiration for the success that they've had. And so you have to be willing as a general manager and the head coach, like, hey, you may not like us, but you're going to respect us because we're always going to be here. We may get knocked around. We're going to step right back up. So to me, heat culture really translates well to the National Football League, because if you're building your team, you certainly can take those traits and put them in practice. And it doesn't even matter what the talent is.
There's so many different layers to that, too. And I love that list. There's an article on ESPN.com. Actually, an NFL GM had sent me about what they've done with undrafted players. I don't know if you've seen that, just the success they've had with undrafted players. And it starts going all the way back with Udonis Haslam, but Struce is undrafted. I mean, they've got Robinson's undrafted. They have, the most undrafted contributing players. And it kind of follows a little bit of what the Rams have done, which is the Heat have always traded for stars. You go all the way back to Mourning. Then when they did it with Shaq, they've done this several times, either signed or traded for big name stars, obviously the big three. But because of that, they've had to supplement the roster with undrafted players. And you think about the philosophy now with the Rams, some of these other teams, is trade for your stars and you got to fill in with those other guys. And I think sometimes we look at it and say, okay, you pay the big guys, and then financially you can't afford that. So you've got to, financially is the reason why you have these other guys. But I think there's another thing, and this article kind of hits on it, is when you get those guys that have to fight and scratch and claw, like, they bring a little bit of an edge to your group. So you might have your skilled star players, but then there's kind of that hungry element that you get from those undrafted players. And this is a quote from Struzan here in this article. Says, it's a competitive environment. It suits guys like us because we're just trying to take advantage of every opportunity, because you never know when you're going to get one or if we'd ever have one in the first place. So you've got just a great mix of stars and then, I don't know, just kind of that grimy, hungry, undrafted player. I think that mix works.
Yeah, I think it does work. And I think you have personal experience, obviously, with the Baltimore Ravens. You talked about post-draft stuff. You guys would give $500 in an opportunity. I just remember that ringing in my head. Yep. Oh, no, we don't do these exorbitant signings anymore. We give you $500, but what we're going to do is give you a real opportunity to play. And the big thing in the National Football League when it comes to undrafted players, what is your philosophical approach to your undrafted? Is it, A, these are just camp bodies that we just need to fill out the camp roster so we can practice with the other guys that we consider our real guys? Or is this a situation where the coaches in the front office are on the same page and we are giving everybody an opportunity? And coach, we're going to develop these guys that come in undrafted, just like we developed the drafted and the big marquee signees. And it's not only are we going to give them opportunity, but do we have a developmental plan? So going back, DJ, this started in Seattle because Seattle is another team that had a run of success with undrafted players. And then Dan Quinn took the same model and used it with the Atlanta Falcons. They called it the Plan D program, plan development. So what they would do is every day after practice, the young players would spend 10 minutes with their position coaches. redoing the individual period, right? So just 10 minutes, DJ, hey, I'm a DB. We're going to backpedal. We're going to break and drive. We're going to plant. The next day, we're going to work on cover two stuff. Jam, reroute, sync, funnel. The next day, hey, let's make sure we work on our bump and run stuff. And so what you do is if you just take those 10 minutes over time, they may end up being 40 minutes a week times 17, 18 weeks. Those little repetitions, you then begin to develop players. And so when you talk about the Miami Heat, like I read an article in GQ that Udonis Haslam talked about. He said they call themselves like the kennel, right? Upstairs in the gym is the kennel because they got all the young, hungry dogs.
Two on twos, so, yeah.
Two on twos upstairs, being able to play. And that is the kind of stuff that I'm like, oh, okay, there's some to it. To me, it reminds me of college. You remember in college, like if you had the red shirts or whatever,
we call it the toilet bowl.
Freshman.
We call
it the freshman scrimmage. Yep. Yeah, the freshman scrimmage, you get after the whatever. Think about it. How often do we get into the season and continue to pour into the young guys? A lot of times, coaches, everybody, we're so focused on winning the week that we forget about the young guys. But the teams that do it right, they are able to work on the here and now while also thinking about the future. And so to me, it's pouring into the player development. It is doing simple drills, doing the daily work, and giving the young players an opportunity to grow. And then knowing, because they've had so much success with the others, the light at the end of the tunnel always illuminates for the young guys because they know, like, well, if I work hard, there's no reason why I can't be Udonis Haslam. There's no reason why I can't be Duncan Robinson and the countless other guys that have been undrafted that end up parlaying their work into big time success, either with the Heat or with other teams because they have that foundation.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, if you look at some of the, you know, some of the great teams that have been consistent. You've touched on the Patriots, the, you know, that's the best dynasty that we've ever seen in the National Football League. Their best player, their leader was a six round pick who was given nothing, who earned everything. And I think not only does that kind of hunger what you want in your leader, but it's also a great example. I don't care if I came into the Patriots as an undrafted player, fifth round pick, fourth round. Tom Brady's a sixth round pick. He's the best player of all time. He runs this place. Like that, that's something. I think about the Seattle Seahawks, another team who maintained that success. Russell Wilson wasn't the first round pick. He came in there as an unheralded player, you know, beat everybody out and took it over and ran with it. So, you know, people can criticize Russ or whatever they, you know, like or don't like about him. That was a shining example to everybody in that building. I think it's just some grit and some toughness that that adds to your organization. And I think about with the Heat with Udonis Haslam. There's another quote from that article, Buck. He said, talking about undrafted guys, we don't have the leash that the draftees got. We don't have the luxury of making the mistakes that the draftees got. We don't have the luxury of being lazy like the draftees got. We don't have the luxury of not knowing the plays like the draftees got. We don't have the luxury of not playing hard like the draftees got. We don't have those luxuries when you're undrafted. And I'm like, that's the leader. That's been the leader of that team for 19 years. Like that's been kind of the standard of what the work looks like.
So that's the standard of what the work looks like. And you know what's so great is they've kept him around. Whether he plays minutes or whatever, he's in uniform. He's on the bench. He's there every day. And DJ, you're right, because you understand it. Like you've been around it. Hey, when you come in, having played their role, when you're the guy that's fighting to make the roster, you know that, hey, the leash is short. I have to know exactly what to do. I can't have mental mistakes and errors. I can't come in out of shape and not make the conditioning test and not do those things. All of that stuff has to be done just to give yourself an opportunity. Yep. But it's not only those guys understanding where it is, but then it's the coaches being able to say, hey, man, wherever you came in, I don't care whether you're drafted, undrafted or not, we're going to play the best players. As you know, we've been with organizations that it doesn't always work like that. The guy that's drafted is, hey, he's ushered in to make the team. But if you say, hey, however you came in, whatever monies were paid out to you to get you here, that's one thing. But the guys who play are the ones who earn the right to play. That is something different. But when you do that and you hold people accountable to that, you now create that kennel mentality where you do have everyone fighting, scratching and clawing for that bone, that opportunity to play, because they know it's a legit opportunity. If you play hard, you play well, you get a chance to play in games.
Two other things. I read about how they encourage respectful confrontation, which I thought was a fascinating use of words. And the other one was they believe strictly in eye-to-eye communication. you never look down and you don't walk away. Like, how many times have you been talking to somebody when it gets kind of uncomfortable and they kind of look down and kind of veer off? Like, no, 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 we are here. You're locked in and we're engaged. And it's just, it's not machismo, whatever the word you want to use there. It's just like, hey, we are adults. This is business. This is serious. Act like a grown up.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of how it is.
Okay. So here's what's funny, right? And looking at that and studying that and learning how to lead as a head coach, like that's one of the things. And one of the things that I have to do in the high school level is we talk about, A, the communication that we do inside the lines is business, not personal. Mm-hmm. And it's like that player, the player, coach, the player, player, the coach. Like, hey, it's business. Don't get caught up in whether it be the tone or the messages. Hey, eye to eye, we're going to hold people accountable. And the hardest thing to do, DJ, is to get players to hold other players accountable, because you don't want the messaging always to come from up top. The best teams that we all have been around are player driven, where the players kind of uphold the standards and understand what the culture is. And they make sure that everyone lives up to the standard on a daily basis. I thought it was fascinating that they talked about respectful communication, because what that also was, it's not only like, hey, we're going to look you in the eye and talk, but sometimes we've been around teams where the stars are given leeway and stars say whatever it is they want to say to people in the building. And they talked about, you know, we don't do that here. So earlier in the year, I mean, it was like a couple months
Jimmy
ago.
Jimmy Butler, that whole thing got nasty on the sideline. Jimmy Butler,
Eric Spoelstra, like we've seen those kinds of confrontations completely tear up a team the rest of the year. And they were able to just, okay, no, we don't. We do it. We handle it. We handle it internally. And then we move on. To me, you really have to have everyone locked in and engaged, where you can have people going back and forth like that. Then they put it to bed. And then they move on and go, and the team is able to flourish without any remnants or residue from that confrontation really leaking into the way the team performs.
All right. So here's my one coaching nugget for you that my son's high school coach does. I don't know if we talked about this before, but I absolutely love it. And, you know, I think about you and the job you've done in building up a program. I love this little aspect of what they do at the end of every practice. And they don't have it. We don't have a big team. It's a smaller school. But at the end of every practice, if you have your coaches out there, every player on the team goes up to every coach and they shake their hand and they look them in the eye after every practice, after every game. And it's not looking down. It's not just brushing by the coach. It's you shake his hand, you look him in the eye, and you go on to the next one. You shake his hand, look him in the eye. But it's like a growing up, a maturing process of like, this is your whole life. Like when you go into business meetings later, when you go to interview for jobs, the ability to shake an adult's hand and look him in the eye, like that sounds silly or corny. I'm telling you, man, like that is a great way to develop young men, like just getting them comfortable in that, being able to look the guy in the eye, shake his hand. Good job, coach. Good job. We'll see you tomorrow. Good job. That's it. And the coaches reciprocate that.
No, I love that. I love hearing that. And I have seen people do that. I think it's great that the coach is doing that, because you do have to show young people how to handle those situations and the communication part, eye to eye, direct communication, very clear communication, being able to have what may be uncomfortable confrontations, but being able to move beyond that. And a lot of times, and it's hard because we live in a world where everything is like, you know, we're texting, we're not really used to verbalizing what it is that we're feeling. But if you're able to do that, and if you're able to be clear, direct, and honest with your dialogue and being able to get past it, I think everyone wants that. I think even you and I in our job, like if someone was to critique us about our performance or whatever, if you can give me clear, direct, and honest feedback, I can do it. Now, my initial reaction, I may bristle. It may be a little uncomfortable. If I might have to step away and then come back. But I think we all want that. But what I don't want is the passive aggressive, the stuff that they never tell you, but then later in a review, it's like, oh, you don't do this. And you're like, well, you never told me that.
Yeah.
Like, even if I don't like it, give me the feedback and then we can do it. But it's teaching people and encouraging that environment. Like, no, we give open and honest feedback. And to take it back to the Patriots, to take it back to the Heat, is being able to coach the stars like that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times we've seen it where the star doesn't get barked at. It's the backup. It's the practice squad player that they're like, oh my God, you got to do da, da, da. well, wait a minute. I just saw the starter not do that. The starter doesn't have that stuff. No. And so when your best players take to the coaching, it sets the tone for everybody else. And so that has to be established within the organization that, hey, we coach everybody hard. We're fair. We do this. But you come here, you're going to get coached and you're going to be held to the standard. You don't live up to the standard, we're going to call you every time that you don't.
Mm-hmm. No, it's an interesting culture to study there. And obviously what they've done has stood the test of time. I communicate with a couple baseball GMs as well. And then I was sending this stuff out to a bunch of different people. And one of the baseball GMs, like Pat Riley, I admire Pat Riley as much as anybody in sports, like all these different teams and organizations and sports, they all study each other, and the Heat are as well respected as anybody.
Yeah, it's funny. I think everyone studies each other. There's open communication. I think that's what makes pro sports, well, all sports so great, is that the open dialogue and how people are willing to share. You would think that everyone would be very secretive and very guarded about what is the secret sauce, but everyone kind of opens up and shares. And then DJ, when you go get down to it, a lot of the ingredients are the same common denominators that we talk about. People may do it in a little different way, but a lot of it is always the same.
Yep, 100%. All right, let's get to these fifth-year options. I want to see if you come up with anything theme-wise of what we can learn from that. I've got a couple thoughts on it. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with these fifth-year options.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, love he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
I'm like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
All right, Buck. So here we go. Fifth-year options that were declined. So this is from the 2019 draft class. So I went back, kind of looked up my notes on those guys, as well as kind of looking at the situations they were in to see what we can learn. Let's start first of all here with Daniel Jones. His option was not picked up. I wrote down on here, we can talk about him and whatever issues he may have had. Obviously, the turnovers have been big, but in terms of what was around him, the P's, the playmakers, mm-hmm. the protection, the play caller, I don't know that he was put in a good spot there.
No, I don't think he was put in a good spot. And I feel like, look, new regime, Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, they do need to see before they make that commitment, because the big change has been when they tweaked the CBA, it became a fully guaranteed option. And so now that's a different decision than what it was when it was just guaranteed for injury. Now you're locked in when you take the option. And so for Daniel Jones, I think there are a couple of things that kind of clouds the evaluation. One, unfortunately, whatever the narrative was when he was drafted, that always hangs over Daniel Jones's performance and play, because so many on the outside were surprised he was taken as high as he was. Like, it's kind of like an uphill battle for him to change perception. Two, the team that he went to was not very good. Didn't have many pieces around him. Offensive line has been shaky. The perimeter players have been up and down, and I still worry about that a little bit. And then he had all the turnovers. But I think he's shown flashes. He's athletic enough to do some really outstanding things. He certainly can make the passes. He just has to take care of the ball. He takes better care of the football. I think he'll be a guy that can be picked up. I'm curious to see what he is able to play like under a creative offensive coordinator who has dealt with a guy who has athletic traits that are similar to Daniel Jones.
Yeah, no, this will be a big year for him. I don't know that there's any real lesson that we can take on that one.
I think you have to look. I think the lesson is, if you're going to take a quarterback like that in the top 10, you got to make sure that you do everything in your power to fully support him, whatever that is. We talked about play year one, evaluate, then figure out to give him what he needs in year two. And so I think the same thing, Daniel Jones needed that. So this year he'll get some of that, and we'll see how he performs.
All right. I actually, now that you kind of say that, I'm looking back here. So they took him in 2019. So in 2020, they took Andrew Thomas in the first round, right? Tried to help that offensive line. And then 2021, they took Kadarius Toney with their first pick, but then came back with Azeez Ojulari and then Aaron Robinson, corner. They went a lot of defense there after that first pick. And I think kind of to your point, which is, when you have a young quarterback, if you have to have a lopsided team early in their career where you kind of build up the offense, I think mm-hmm. I'm okay with that. But don't let you get to this point in time where you got to make a decision on his fifth year option and you haven't put enough pieces around him to be able to make that decision. You know, if your defense suffers, it suffers, but you got to be a little lopsided to help them out on that side early in their career.
Yeah. And I think with the young quarterback, the younger the quarterback, I think the more experience you need around him on the perimeter. You need guys that are going to be consistent and reliable. The stability, I think, helps young quarterbacks develop. I think sometimes it's hard to pair young quarterbacks with young playmakers on the outside, because everyone is learning. I would like to have an expert out there to kind of help him, at least one veteran player that's a high-end player that can help him, that can be his reliable number one while he's figuring out how to play the game. yeah, I can't say that they have done Daniel Jones any favors early in his career.
All right, running backs, Josh Jacobs, his option, which was $8 million, was declined. I know some of that's just the product of the running back position. But if I was going to say, okay, what's the one lesson? I think he's good in the passing game. I don't think he's dominant, you know, in the passing game. I think maybe that factored into it a little bit. I also think he's a workhorse back, and I loved him coming into that draft. But, you know, this is not a home run hitter. So if you get a back that's not necessarily the most dynamic as a home run hitter, and then maybe is not a big time weapon in the passing game, he's functional, but not like a big time weapon, I guess that would be maybe the lesson you take there.
Yeah, it's tough. And it's another example, and it's hard because I've had to come to grips with this. Like, running backs in the first round can be really, really tricky and difficult unless they are what we call like five-star, high-end, what I would say, worthy of being top 10 players. If they're not that, it becomes harder to take them in the first round because maybe they don't have what we call transcendent talent. And so with Josh Jacobs, he's very good players, best maybe running back in that class, but you still don't know, like, oh, do I want to sign up another 4 or 5 years of this? Good player, maybe not great player. And so that's why you declined that on the running back.
And you just look at kind of what you can get running backs for, not only in the draft, but you look at what you can get the guys even in the free agent market. You're sitting there going $8 million. I could chop that $8 million bucks up into three running backs, really.
And then look, and I told you, like, the philosophy was draft one high, but you draft him with the intention of never re-signing him, you know, DJ, because even if he plays at a high level where he's a two-time or three-time rushing champ, you then have the franchise tag at your disposal. You have a few different vehicles to be able to do it without ever really having to commit long-term to a running back with significant money. And it's been much easier to find running backs because the position has become really a part-time position as opposed to a workhorse position.
All right, let's get to the wideouts. There's only one. The Patriots declined their option on N'Keal Harry at $12.4 million. What do you take away from that one?
I think this is more about the player than the position.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Yeah, unfortunately for them, you know, like, the Patriots have a tough time identifying and drafting high-end receivers, and he's another one. Look, like some of the things that he did at Arizona State, he was versatile. He was terrific in terms of his dominance in the Pac-12. I worried about the speed, and I worried about him being a little heavy-footed when I watched him coming out.
Not sudden at all, like no sudden.
Yeah, and so it just hasn't worked out, you know. And so I think this is one where they both kind of understand he hasn't been on the field enough. He hasn't made enough plays. And when you're a first-round pick, man, first-round pick is expected to be a foundational piece to that offense, and he hasn't emerged as that.
I think also it's a good lesson to take about fit. So if you look at the Patriots and look at where all their productions come over the years, think about the type of receivers with the Edelmans, the Welkers.
Those dudes in the slot.
Quick changer direction slot guys. Then you think about, okay, Randy Moss, the only one really had success. He's a one-on-one. He's a unicorn. But he had obviously had juice and burst and could go, you know, do some things down the field. N'Keal Harry is kind of a X, you know, old school X, just a boxy, strong, big physical guy who's not real sudden, not going to be a dynamic route runner, and then doesn't have that top speed to go take the top off the defense. So you kind of look back and say, who have they had like that that's been successful?
They haven't, you know, like you're right. Like, it's funny you bring that up. Their best players at the position, the most effective players, they all come out the same box.
Troy Brown,
right? Yeah. They all are the Amendolas, the Edelmans, the Troy Browns, the Wes Welkers. Like, they're really good at identifying the slot receivers. Andrew Hawkins told me, like, when he went up there, he didn't have him run a 40. They had him run short shot on three cone because it's change direction, whatever. They know exactly what they want there. They know how to get those kinds of guys open. So they just shop at that store. Only we're going right here. We're only going to get those kinds of players because they have a clear plan and they know how to get those guys loose and involved in the offense.
Yeah, it's like you go to the grocery store. I'm going to the grocery store. I'm going to get chicken. I know I want chicken. I'm going to have chicken for dinner. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I'm on the pasta aisle. Like, what am I doing over here? Yeah. They come here for pasta.
Yeah, they're in the wrong aisle. And so they shopped and got the wrong kind of player. And so it just kind of changes so much about what they want to do and how they have to do it.
All right, offensive lineman that had their option declined, Caleb McGarry with the Falcons. Bradbury, Garrett Bradbury with the Vikings, and Andre Dillard with the Eagles. Let me take the last two because I went back through and looked at my notes. Bradbury and Dillard, both ultra, ultra athletic. Both of them had play strength questions. So I think I'm going to kind of label that as, you know, when you're grading offensive linemen and they have a play strength concern, it's easy to say, oh, I just get stronger. You know, I just need to get stronger. But I don't know, that's you get dangerous when you get into that territory. I've had other offensive linemen. I missed on both these guys. Mm-hmm. Other offensive linemen I've missed on, I've made that same mistake. So it's a little lesson for me. Those alarm bells should go off when you say a great athlete but doesn't have play strength. That should concern you.
Yeah, like DJ, it's tough, man, because you can tell me that Gary Bradbury was not going to be a terrific zone blocker. Like even we talk about fit and scheme, I'm like, well, this scheme is perfect. Gary Kubiak's scheme is like the perfect thing for him. When you watched him, like, it screamed, this is a zone center. Look at him track and run, watch him move. Look how athletic he is. And yeah, play strength matters. Your ability to move people, because what happens is we're kind of seeing this thing in the league where we're seeing these big 320, 335 pound guys that they put right over the top of the center, and he's just beating them into submission. You know, like Villaverde is one of one in terms of that. But we are seeing more of those big guys with size and athleticism give you problems at the point of attack. And if you don't have the ability to at least stalemate them at the line of scrimmage, it's hard to put them on the field.
I think it's connected too when you look at all the too high safety trend that we have in the league right now. Okay, well, if you're going to play with too high safeties, you got fewer guys in the box, which means teams are trying to get bigger up front with their guys because they don't have as many of them up there. And I think that maybe works against him a little bit. So, and then you had Caleb McGarry. When I go back through, to me, it was just a little bit, there was a tightness issue, a stiffness issue. That was his concern. Real physical, real tough, totally different than the other two. But I guess you kind of say, like, man, you got somebody that's really tight. And I mean, obviously, you go figure. You want real athletic, strong guys, you know, like, okay, but I know it's not that simple.
But you know, like the thing about the offensive line, we were talking about houses before we clicked on live, but the offensive line, the neighborhood matters more than any other position. Like mm-hmm. the composition of all five really matters. And so like, it's one thing to have the guy that is the rugged mauler brawler, but if the other guys are not, like it just doesn't work, because as you're the offensive coordinator, you're trying to figure out the best way to play. If everyone is unable to play the same way, you're limited and someone gets exposed. And so for Caleb McGarry, when I look at the rest of that offensive line, he was a little bit of the outlier in terms of his style of play and what the strengths of his game was.
All right, let's get to these defensive linemen. We had Cleve Farrell, Jerry Tillery, and LJ Collier. Options weren't picked up. Let's work back to front here. LJ Collier, first of all, I just thought, I mean, he was my 56th player, Buck. He was a 29th pick.
I mean, that was a myth. I didn't see him. So when I was looking at him coming out, I didn't know what the blue trait was.
Yeah. He ran 4.91.
Yeah. But in watching him, he was more of a power rusher than an explosive rusher off the edge. And there's a place in the league for the power players, but power players typically aren't high level pass rushers. Mm-hmm. You know, he was overdrafted.
Yep, he was overdrafted. So he was 27 spots overdrafted, but yeah, he did not test well. I'm looking at my notes, all power. He's got some shock in his hands. Struggle versus angle blocks. Now, this is the other thing I want to get to that ties these three guys together. Mm-hmm. LJ Collier was 6'0", 2'2", 283. Tweener, right?
Well below the standard.
Then you look at, well, remember, like, is he inside? Is he outside? You know, mm-hmm. some people say, oh, the versatility is a positive. Other people will say that he doesn't fit. He's a tweener. He doesn't fit either spot. Jerry Tillery with the Chargers, and I see him all the time. Jerry Tillery is kind of interesting because he's got a 6 foot, he's 6'0", 6'4", 295, 493. So you say, okay, he's an interior guy. He's actually more comfortable rushing on the edge. He plays too high. He gets banged around inside. So he's another guy who's kind of a tweener. He's not, you know, he likes to rush on the edge, but he's built like somebody who should play inside. The Stanford game, you know, Herbig in that game, going back to my notes, he just moved mm-hmm. him and mauled him in that game. So it's kind of, doesn't really have a fit, doesn't really have a home. Cleland Farrell, I mean, Buck, he was the fourth pick. Where was he on my list? I think I had Furrow. He was my 19th guy. So again, was overdrafted. If you remember, he did not run a 40 because everybody knew he was going to run slow. But he was somebody who's 6.043, 264, really kind of at his best inside because he doesn't have any juice coming off the edge. So he's got an outside body with an inside skill set.
Yeah, it
just makes it hard. These guys all just weren't fits. Like they were just kind of tweeners.
So here's maybe the scouting lesson and all the things that we're talking about. Because if you go, you talk about those guys. Didn't you talk about Bradbury? Who's the other lineman that we talked about?
Yeah, Dillard. Yeah.
So DJ, it is when we talk about first rounders, because all those guys are first round picks, it's the certainty. Like what we're talking about, and we've said this, I don't need home runs. I can deal with doubles. And so it's being able to stand in front of the room and say, okay, he's an expert or he's a master of this part of his craft. I know exactly where he is in this area, as opposed to there are too many questions. Does he play outside or inside? Is he a zone player? Is he a gap scheme player or whatever? In the first round, when we're talking about the best of the best, when you're picking someone, you want to be able to check off all the boxes. Mm-hmm. He does this. This is how we're going to play him. This is what impact he's going to give us because he is great at this. Yep. Now, if what he's great at doesn't fit us, cool. But your first round player, it should be clear and apparent what he's great at. He has to have an A-plus first pitch. And you know exactly what that first pitch is. And no one can match him when it comes to that. And all of those players that we are talking about, there were questions, even in you talking about your notes and me talking about my report, like there were questions about all of them that just should have made you pause a little bit. Now, look, our people that work for those teams that took them were like, oh yeah, you guys have hindsight or whatever. But no, like when we talk about it, there were some questions that had to be addressed when you're talking about in the first round. It's just different. Yeah. It's different in the first round compared to other rounds.
No, it's interesting when you kind of take those lessons and you apply them to kind of the most recent draft class and see some of those guys that, oh man, okay, maybe there were some warning signs with some of these dudes. The last two, and I'll put them together here, even though it's a linebacker and a safety, Devin Bush for the Steelers and Jonathan Abram with the Raiders. Two players, I'll be honest, I love both these guys coming out. So, I mean, I'm kind of falling on a sword on some of these here. But those guys, what we loved about them, Buck, they could both fly. They could both big-time run. Big time hitters, big time tempo, like bring energy, all those things that we love. The one question mark on both of them was just some cover stuff, some man cover stuff. And if you look at it in the league that we're in right now, linebackers and safeties, if you can't cover, it's hard, man. You can have all that other stuff going for you, but it just limits you and you're going to get exposed if you can't cover.
If you can't cover, you're going to be exposed. And you have to have something else that counteracts that liability. So if you can't cover, then you better be a darn good blitzer. Like you have to be a guy that when we put you in sub packages, we can find a way to impact. I'll call it Jamal Adams effect. And even though there's some conversations about maybe buyer's remorse in terms of how he played last year, given the money, like you have to have a trait that enables the defensive coordinator to put you on the field and in a position to impact the game. And so Jonathan Abrams is a terrific hitter. I don't know if he's a great tackler. And then there's the questions and coverage. And look, let's be honest, durability has been an issue. Like he's been banged up a lot. And so that's a problem. But your safeties have to be able to cover in this league. And I've said, and this is going all the way back to when I was working in Seattle, Dick Roach, former secondary coach, used to say this. An ideal secondary is one where there's one safety and three corners. And that strong safety or whatever type should be a corner that can come down and play your tight end or your slot receiver without us having to go to nickel. And at the time, this would be a dated reference, but he said Sean Springs would be a perfect strong safety type in our league. And so Sean Springs, which is like a Charles Woodson type, like a bigger cornerback, who had agility and athleticism to be able to play out wide, but also come in the slot. That is ideally what you're looking for to be able to do it. They can play in the box. They can play man-to-man. You don't have to hide those guys in the passing game.
Yep. No, that's a great point. You know, you want to have as many corners on the field as you can possibly get out there. All right. Well, that's it. Those are the guys. Some interesting lessons there. And again, try and apply those as we go forward. I think that is helpful. Anything else you want to hit on, Buck, before we get out of here? It's been great to be back together.
No, that was great. That was a great conversation. That fifth-year option stuff, you know, like, because this is the time, DJ, like, before we begin to dig into next year's draft class, because we're getting up. I think the guys are going into meetings here in the next week or so to go and get the first list.
Yeah, national meetings.
National meetings are beginning to talk. So what you want to do as a scout, you want to kind of do some reflection. Look at what you've learned. Look at what has happened over the last couple of years. Look at the guys in the league that are playing that maybe surprised you before you get the intel on this new class, because you kind of want to have a fresh set of eyes with new info that maybe help you grade the new class based on the information that you got, to kind of be able to like, oh, okay, you know what? I might need to be a little more lenient or a little more stringent on some of these things based on how the league is trending and what is playing in the league as opposed to what is not having success in the league.
No doubt. Man, it's been fun to be back together. Hope you guys have enjoyed hanging out with us here. We do appreciate you sticking with us. We will be back here in a couple days to do this all over again. Thanks to Nabil for a wonderful job putting this together as he does each and every week. We'll see you next time right here on Move the Sticks.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.